Qua so, bro.
Ay.
There's not a rule that you have to use the three subs.
He's the best left back in Canada, without a doubt.
And hello everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Third Sub Podcast, episode 171. I'm your host Alexander Gange Ruzic, joined as always by Samuel Rowan, and we're back. A little bit of Whitecaps chatter. Obviously the last time you joined us, we were breaking down a victory on the road, LAFC, previewing Sporting Kansas City away for the Vancouver Whitecaps. Could they get the job done? Spoiler alert, not quite. Return to the old road fortunes. You know, a big loss, 3-0. One of those where you can both explain everything that happened, but can't explain everything that happened, because that's typical of the Whitecaps on the road. It was a return to the usual service for the Whitecaps, and it's a return of the usual service for us, I guess, a few weeks in a row where we've been able to string together some episodes, which is nice as the schedule has slowed down. Although Leagues Cup is coming and the break was going to make things very chaotic, so we're preparing for that. But before we dive into whatever we want to call this SKC loss, which all of a sudden SKC is starting to turn to a bit of a house of horrors for the Whitecaps again over the years, after they had that weird stretch in 2017, 2018, where they, or not 2018, definitely not 2018, but 2016, 2017, where they made it something. But Sam, how's it going this week?
Yeah, doing well. I'm deep in the midst of Wimbledon fever at the moment here. So yeah, everything tennis in the middle of England. It's been fun, but yeah, after so much positivity on the last Third Sub podcast about how well Vancouver had played against LAFC, how everything was looking up, you know, they're near the top and all these advanced metrics, and then nothing like a 3-0 loss to just dampen those spirits a little bit. That being said, like, I don't think this podcast, at least from my perspective, is going to be all doom and gloom. Like, ultimately, you didn't get a point on the road. At the end of the day, you know, there's no pictures on the scorecard. Whether you lost 2-1 at the death or you got blown out 3-0, it doesn't really matter. This is while the Whitecaps are missing some key players at the Gold Cup. I mean, you know, hat tip to Ali Ahmed just going off. Was he Canada's best player at the Gold Cup so far? Like, I don't think that's a crazy statement. He's certainly in the mix. So, you know, we're going to dive into some of the things that went wrong specifically, but I think overall what's really important, which we can kind of tee up, is three successive straight home matches before Leagues Cup. And then the Whitecaps are going to have a lot of road work to do the rest of the way. So these matches overall are the ones that are absolutely critical. So, you know, if we're back here this time next week talking about a 2-0 loss to the Seattle Sounders, I think we can hit the panic button a little bit more, you know, voice our concerns a little bit more feverishly. But at the moment, I think, you know, I want to temper what I was expecting out of it. I predicted a relatively bland 1-1. And to be honest, the way this match went, you look at parts of it, I could see how it could have ended up 1-1. I do think the scoreline was a little bit favorable for SKC, but there were also some, you know, some not so great moments from the Whitecaps and things we definitely need to dive into, which we will on this podcast. So looking forward to getting into it, as always, Alex.
Of course. And silver linings. I like that you mentioned the Gold Cup. You want some silver linings. I mean, Ali Ahmed's looked great. Julian Gressel has been getting minutes. Javane Brown, you know, his Jamaica side have been cruising. But hey, look, you want a silver lining, Canada versus US this Sunday. Maybe not the greatest matchup if you're Canadian. You know, it's going to be fascinating to see if Canada can let this group stage go behind them. But hey, You're guaranteed to get a midfielder back for Wednesday against Austin. Either it will be Ali Ahmed if Canada is eliminated, or Julian Gressel if the U.S. loses. So at least there's a silver lining that you're not going to be losing, one of those. Or, you'll obviously lose one of them, but you won't be losing both of them for deep runs in the tournament. Of course, there's a world where Jamaica plays U.S. in the final and you lose Brown and Gressel pretty much until League's Cup. But hey, the fact that you're getting one back this week is a bit of a silver lining. And that'll be nice, but of course you don't want to look too far ahead for that. And let's just return to this Kansas game. 3-0 result, frustrating in the sense that, again, you'd like to see the Whitecaps get some sort of consistency on the road. I suppose those silver linings, as we said, the path is clear: win four of your road games or so, and maybe throw in a draw in there for them to push towards that top four. Yeah, they lost one, but at least the fact they won against LAFC kind of gives them a bit of a buffer. And as we said before, the easy road schedule's coming up, right? Kansas has been one where, they're still a solid team that maybe isn't that's been all over the map. But again, you still got this stretch of Chicago, Colorado, Toronto, et cetera, coming up. But as for the game itself, SKC, 30 minutes, the Whitecaps were in a decent position. They came out, they were pushing, they're receiving. It wasn't, anything too chaotic, but then it just kind of all one goal, right? One just chaos down the side, down the flank. Ball gets in the middle, next thing Remy Walters just dancing into this ginormous pocket of space in the box, and it's 1-0 Kansas. But Sam, before Walter waltzed into the box, it was still an all right first 30 minutes from the Whitecaps.
Well, yeah, so I put this as the first bullet point on the docket today because, full disclosure, I saw the score line the morning after before I watched the match. So that always kind of changes the way you watch things a little bit. And so I guess I was expecting, oof, this is going to be really rough. And then 15, 20, 25 minutes in, I'm going, the Whitecaps are not holding a lot of possession, but they were able to break up SKC opportunities before they create anything too dangerous. Sergio Cordova and Simon Betcher didn't look great, but at least they were getting in decent areas, and guys like Ryan Raposo were trying to play in some dangerous balls. Ryan Gold, not to the same extent as LAFC, but getting on the ball a little bit in transition. Like there were some things where if you paused at like the 25th minute, you'd go, all right, this is a this is a B+ road showing so far. And if they can get one moment on the break, snatch an early goal, all of a sudden now they've got SKC on the ropes a little bit, and they could, they can get points out of this match. And then, as you said, things were kind of teetering at that balance. And when Walter was able to find a ton of space in the box and open SKC's account, that's when it really started to fall apart a little bit. I think one thing looking back at the match that I maybe didn't realize at the time, or I didn't think enough about, but since I've kind of had the chance to reflect on, is it was one thing to go down to LA and just like concede all the possession and like counter press and play this high intensity style. But they went down to Sporting KC, and we heard from Vanni Sartini in the week talking about, we can't take the same ultra-aggressive attitude down to Sporting KC. Like, he knew that wasn't realistic in the heat. The limited squad they had. But they still held so little of the ball. And I think that was, at the end of the day, a bit of a problem. One thing that really didn't help, which we can dive into, is the strikers in Sergio Cordova and Simon Betcher provided absolutely no hold up play whatsoever. No real outlet for passes. It was more like turn and run off the shoulder. And we saw Matias Laborda and Ranko Veselinovic, Luis Martins playing a lot of long speculative balls that were just like easy headed clearances away or easy off the chest down to feet for Sporting KC defenders. So I think that was a little bit disconcerting. You look at the Whitecaps overall, and so these last two matches, 38% possession in both of them. And the last time they held less than 45% of the ball was all the way back April 15th against Austin. Wow. So they've actually been you know, with Julian Gressel kind of growing into his role, Ryan Gauld playing better, Ali Ahmed, all the good stuff the Whitecaps have been able to do as the season's progressed, they've been holding at least a decent chunk of the ball. I mean, even against Seattle last time out, which is something we'll get into on the back end of the show, where they had that 2-0 win. Yeah, they only held 45% of the ball. And that was like a low possession defensive showing for them. So I do think something got a bit mixed up. Like they had a real specific game plan against LAFC and it worked. And then they were constrained by the roster and they trotted out the same, a very similar starting 11, but they didn't really go for the same ultra aggressive style. They had different strikers and it didn't work, right? Like you could see as the match went on that, all right, they were able to sort of sustain and just survive and play okay through the first 25, 30 minutes. But after that, especially when they had to push a little bit more to find the goal, it really broke down. So, I mean, Alex, I don't know where you want to start on the individual points. I mean, for me, it was all about just the black hole, ultimately, that the strikers created. Not a lot of pressing, no hold up play. They combined for something like 40 touches between the two of them. Like it was rough. And we talked about on our last show, trying to predict and prognosticate, would it be Simon Betcher? Would it be Sergio Cordova? How would their tendencies and attributes, you know, who might be the second guy that played alongside Brian White? And obviously the hip injury in the week really threw things off and we saw both of them start and neither of them really had any success.
Yeah, I think, lots to go with there. I think the strikers is a good point, especially the outlet. And, you know, again, it continues to be fascinating kind of the discourse or, you know, around the strikers, just because you look now and it's like, again, Brian White, whether he's scoring or not, again, he's the clear number one just in terms of what he brings to the attack. But now it's like, A, what do you do if White's ever out? And B, how do you manage both Cordova and Betcher? And it almost feels like at times it's like, you know, they're almost like, especially Betcher. Betcher is a fascinating one because we're kind of talking about it pre-show. It feels like with Betcher, he suits very specific kinds of games. Feels like you can tell almost instantly when Betcher's in and around a game, be it off the bench when things are a bit chaotic or, you know, maybe against like a Montreal, for example, where they got that early red card and the Whitecaps kind of got to dominate. When he's on, he's on. But then also, like, you know, we've seen at times that when he's off, he can very easily disappear into a game, which as a striker, you don't always want to see, right? Especially you'll accept it if you know, you'll disappear and then you come up and pop up with a goal or a chance. But it just feels like Betcher can sometimes fade away into games. And, you know, it's especially interesting when you got a guy like Cordova alongside him who, you know, Cordova, as we've seen, he's continuing to be a presence out there and get into the fight. But it's almost like he just needs, you know, he needs something to pair off of, something to go with and something to just grasp onto, especially form wise. So yeah, it's very interesting strike partnership. I don't think it's one that, you know, I almost looking back, of course, hindsight's always 50-50, almost would have liked a Levante Johnson. You mentioned some of these long balls, some of these, you know, trying to get the ball into the channels, you know, maybe put a guy like Cordova higher up the pitch, like, okay, try to just be a presence, soak up pressure, and then have Levante kind of play underneath and find those pockets, find those sorts of spaces that he showed he can get onto into in that Canadian Championship final and at that MLS Next Pro level. Yeah, it just feels like the strikers were kind of off, and it feels like, you know, I love the points about the overall pressure because it feels like for this Whitecaps team, for all the talk we've had about what ails them defensively and what they succeed with, it feels like for them it's a good mix of pressure. You're aggressive, but you're not like pressing like Liverpool, like, you know, guys stretching over completely messing up your lines. But also, as we've seen, they're not necessarily a team that can sit back. Like, I can't really think of to a time that where they're sitting back and inviting pressure, like properly sitting back and parking the bus. That always looks so uncomfortable. It always just looks like, you know, you think even moments like LAFC away,
you know, or moments when you've kind of seen it more when they have B lineups, and I'm talking LAFC away, like Champions League, of course, or moments like this. They just, as soon as they sit back and invite pressure, it looks so uncomfortable. It looks so unorthodox. And, you know, you kind of saw it in this Kansas game where against LAFC, yeah, they were almost too aggressive at times, but that they were able to play on the front foot. It almost helped their defenders. They weren't having to defend as much because the Whitecaps were kind of being protagonists. As soon as they flip that over and ask the other team to attack them, the other team's almost like, cool, like perfect. And, you know, the Whitecaps just completely fall out of their shell. And I think that was a bit interesting in that I understand maybe that why the approach was more pragmatic, given that what you have available to you, but it kind of shows that for this Whitecaps team to be at their best, there needs to be a certain level of, you know, middle pressure from the front, pressure to keep your lines organized. Cause as soon as they sit back and sit beneath the ball, and to be fair, they're not really built for that. Like, I feel like that's something you know, would work more if you have very defense first fullbacks who can, you know, hold your position. They don't really have that. They have a lot of attack minded fullbacks. It'd be if you have a dominant ball winner in the box, right? Like someone who could control and command that box, you know, for as good as Ranko Veselinovic has been. And, you know, all the other center backs have been at times, we've said they don't really have one of those guys. They have the guys like Veselinovic kind of been at their best when it's 1v1, when it's in front of them, when they're kind of playing within that system. And yeah, I just think the approach, they got it wrong. And I get why they went for what they did, but it feels like they almost tilted the pendulum too much. And we've seen that at times. I think they need to find a good balance between, you know, having a good amount of aggression and just tweaking it from game to game. Okay, in a game you don't have the personnel or it's a different opponent, you scale it down a little bit, but also you don't want things to be completely go from one end to the other, because I think we saw the stark differences in LAFC versus SKC.
Yeah, I think you're totally right in terms of the personnel, right? Like if two of your three center backs are going to be Matias Laborda and Luis Martins, you cannot sit back and invite and absorb pressure. Like that just is not going to work. And then, you know, you've got Ryan Raposo playing fullback, who wing back, fullback, whatever you want to call it. And again, like I thought in a match that didn't have a ton of bright spots, when he was on the ball and trying to do something, at least it looked positive in a match that lacked a little bit of juice. But I mean, we saw in the first goal, him and Schopf get committed in the midfield, and all of a sudden there's acres of space, right? Like it's just that was the way this match was always going to go if they weren't able to maintain something, you know, not living up to that LAFC level of high intensity pressure, but had a little bit more of a specific idea of what they wanted to do. And I do think it probably left Vanni Sartini in a really difficult position midweek, because he probably had this plan set up for Brian White to play. And okay, let Ranko, let Laborda, let Martins play some long balls out of the back to White to release pressure, and then have White dish it off to Vite, to Gall, to Schopf, and then kind of build something off of that. And then the problem was in this match that never happened, because they had Cordova and Becher up front, and then you're inviting more and more pressure. You're sitting back, and it's just a bit of a vicious cycle. So, Alex, you want to chime in there? You have something to say?
Oh no, I mean that's pretty bang on. I think again, yeah, it's one of those where, especially for the Whitecaps, right? It's their success. It feels like it's come out. You know, it's holistic. They're a very holistic team, and it feels like it's fitting of the image Vanni Sartini. And
yeah, it's a sum of pieces, not one individual is more than the sum of its pieces. But that being said, I think you take one or two key individuals out, and it can have a drastic effect.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think that's it, right? When that approach, you kind of need everything to click, and when something's not clicking, be it absences, be it just roles being a bit off, you kind of feel it throughout the whole team. And again, it's like one of those where, yeah, like you mentioned, on the ball, not terrible, but you're just lacking that same sort of penetration, that sort of hold up. All of a sudden you just invite more pressure, and it's like a trickle down effect. And even like defensively, you know, they're not allowing a huge amount of high quality chances in this game, despite a 3-0 scoreline, especially in that first half, right? Like the XG numbers show, like, it wasn't something where they gave up these high danger chances. But I just look at that first goal as a prime example. It's just SKC ran into a wave of of white cap shirts ended up on the other side with the ball. All of a sudden, again, Walter just is dancing. This just, it, you know, it blows my mind to watch it back and see this just huge pocket of space that he's running into. He almost saying like, my goodness, someone gave me that kind of space. I'd almost back myself to maybe force a save, not saying I'd rip one home as Walter did. Very, very nice finish, a little dink, really, not so much a rip. But again, it's one of those, where especially at this level, you're inviting MLS players to run at you like that. It's not going to end very well. And yeah, I think it's frustrating that it the setup was the way it was across the board, right? It's one of those where, for the Whitecaps, you almost be, again, you want to see just good performances and have the results kind of almost be an aside, right? Like it's the road in MLS. You can play great and lose, but it's just a bit of frustrating to see how the, overall it felt like some of it was self-inflicted, let's say.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, honestly, that in large part kind of summarizes my thoughts about SKC. Like that to me was the tail of the tape. And I even said in the stuff I wrote post-match, like I don't honestly know how much I would have expected or thought Vanni Sartini should have done differently given the match went the way it did. I just think that the players you were missing, the way the week went, this is kind of unfortunately, the way it's set up. And I think you just needed better performances out of Cordova and Betcher, and, you needed a bounce or two to go your way. And then, so the only other thing I really wanted to talk about was Yoi Takaoka. I mean, this is not, it's always the goalkeeper blame game, right? Like it's an unenviable position to be in, where anytime you make an error, it's going to be brought up. But obviously that third goal is a bit of a backbreaker. And I just thought in general, like, again, this is not the way the Whitecaps want to play, but in a match like this, where they sat back and absorbed pressure so much, having someone that was just like a bit of a more physically imposing force that could, rise up in the air in the box and snatch a ball or just come out aggressively and swarm. Like that's who they needed in this match. And Takaoka, very, very good keeper, but certainly much better when his team is in possession on the front foot, not just sitting back and absorbing pressure. And I think that Takaoka at times, looked a little bit uncomfortable playing that style. And ultimately, not that the Whitecaps are going to get back in this match, but they had a couple chances at the start of the second half, and you were thinking maybe, oh, this could be a one goal match. And then a backbreaker from Eric Tommy, I believe. And that was kind of that for the Whitecaps.
Yeah. I love the Takaoka point, just because it kind of leads to the earlier point about kind of wondering why the Whitecaps kind of played this way and not them not really suiting a more of a defensive pragmatic system. I think Takaoka is a big, another one where I didn't point him out, but it's a good point. Cause yeah, he's not huge. He's not imposing in the sense that you're going to see him climbing over guys on corners and, leaving elbows in and just completely commanding a box. Like, I don't know what you want to say, like Oliver Kahn style or something like along those likes. I think Takaoka's strengths, and when he's played at his best, it's sweeping. Obviously we've seen on the ball, just playing out the back, being aggressive, cutting down angles, quick reflex saves where, you do well to get off your line quickly. When you're sitting deep, there's not much of that, especially because when you're sitting deep as your team sitting deep as a goalkeeper, you kind of have to just stay on the line, right? Because if anything, you go up, it just kind of opens up angles for shooting, for crossing, to get beat from distance, because you can get screened easier, deflections can catch you out if you're not on your line, right? You want as much time to process deflections and moments like that. And I don't know, I just think Takaoka, as we've seen, he's not necessarily a goalie who thrives on his line, and that's part of his, that's his size, that's his style. And it's just, again, it feels like something where Takaoka at times when the Whitecaps have won, he's often been their best player. And you could argue that he's one of their most important players. You'd want to put him in a position to succeed. And this sort of passive formation doesn't really suit him. And we've seen that at times as well on the road, where, it feels like he's had a lot more of his struggles typically on the road in games where the Whitecaps have had less pressure and they've sat a little deeper, and it really doesn't benefit him. And you know, I think that's something to look at. Absolutely. That all of a sudden you play a bit more aggressively. You play like yourself against LAFC. Takaoka, yeah, he allowed two goals, but you weren't sitting there thinking like, he had a bad game. It was just more an LAFC. Whereas, yeah, this game is one, or even this first goal, right? Where Walter waltzed kind of into the box where, yeah, maybe, you know, could have, you know, a taller goalkeeper, one who's more used to playing on his line, might have just stood there and, you know, there's no chip on, or he's able to get a finger to where Takaoka kind of almost instinctively stepped out a bit. And then, you know, all of a sudden the lob, the half lob, supposedly kind of catches him out, right? And it's little moments like that where, you know, you do wonder. And again, it shows that for Vanni Sartini, right, that in some of these games, as much as personnel dictates how you want to play as an overall, personnel also, the personnel you have dictates the way you should play. And the fact that they went a bit more pragmatic seemed to really hurt Takaoka. And that's not the first time that's happened to him on the road this season. It's, you know, especially when you look in hindsight.
Yeah, the reason I brought it up is like the thing that I always think about with this in reference to goalkeepers is like the type of goalkeeper you need if you're in the bottom half of the Premier League table battling against relegation, right? Like you're going to have to sit deep and get shelled match in, match out. And someone like Takaoka is not well suited for that kind of system. You want someone really tall who can just basically stay on their line 99% of the time and be a shot stopper, come out and retrieve on corners, come out and knuckle it away, and really like not do anything else other than that. And then it's just Takaoka is so diametrically opposed to that mold of keeper. So it's just, yeah, it felt like the wrong assignment for him in SKC. And as you said, I think when they've struggled on the road a little bit and they have sat back, I think Takaoka also really like builds energy and confidence off being involved in the buildup, right? Like it kind of, I mean, as a keeper, it can be tough at times, like to stay in the match. And the more he's involved in the buildup, I feel like the more alert and the more dialed in he is. So, yeah, anyways, hopefully the Whitecaps can go back to playing a little bit more possession style football, play to their strengths against the Seattle Sounders upcoming. I mean, Alex, do we have any final thoughts on this SKC match? I think that kind of wraps it up, honestly. Again, I mean, as I said off the start of the show, for a 3-0 loss, I think reasonably measured comments, like we're not pushing the panic button. The one thing I will just say, and this, you know, kind of goes without saying, it'll be a theme as we dive into Seattle Sounders preview here. Just the way the MLS has set up their schedule in terms of international play concurrent with MLS league play, it's really frustrating. It's not just the Whitecaps, right? Like we look at Seattle coming up and they're missing the Roldans, they're missing Jordan Morris. Like you want to see best on best. And I think what makes it especially frustrating is that we've got this, this competition, we don't know what it's going to be like yet. So I won't make any grand proclamations about it, but you've got key players missing MLS regular season matches, and then they're all going to be available again for Leagues Cup. And it's kind of like, well, could you not have done this the other way around? Could we not have had the one-off cup competition during international play and saved the unrestricted time for MLS league matches? It's just, it's frustrating in the sense that if, you know, Don Garber and co, they want people to take the regular season seriously, league's kind of taking a lot of steps to remove some of that legitimacy by expanding the playoff format, continuing to play through international breaks. All the messaging kind of says, oh, we'll just make it to the playoffs and then like figure it out after that. So it's a bit frustrating because, yeah, I would have, you know, it'd be nice to see Ali Ahmed and Julian Gressel on the road in KC. It would be nice to see the Sounders leading goal scorer, Jordan Morris, playing in Vancouver on Saturday, but that's not the league we're playing in at the moment, unfortunately.
Just mind-boggling because it just devalues your own product, right? Like that's the part like I don't get, because it's like at the end of the day, right? Like if you want to sign internationals, those are typically very good players. Yeah, maybe some, you know, play for national teams that aren't highly regarded, but still, just playing for your country is an honor, especially some of these players play for top national teams, as we've seen, right? Like, all of a sudden, you got guys like Thiago Almada at Atlanta playing for the World Cup winners. He's won a World Cup. That's just an easy example, but you look across the board, like, there's guys playing for U.S., Canada, Mexico, a lot of these top teams, you know, where their services are required. Like, that's a good thing. You should be celebrating that. And, you know, I think there's also the reality that fans are coming to watch these stars play. Like, if you're the Whitecaps right now, Julian Gressel's been pretty much arguably your most consistent player. Fans are wanting to watch him. He's kind of been super entertaining. Ali Ahmed, super the surprise, you know, Canadian story, great story. He's the kind of player you want to watch on your team right now. Jordan Morse, hometown Seattle kid, scoring goals for fun this year, national team, but you want to see him play. Like, it's something where it's like, why would you want to devalue your product by not having those players available for those games, right? And it's your league match. And it's like, it affects things like tickets, right? Because it's like, as much as, you know, those people sell tickets, it's like, you know, for example, like, if you're Messi, like, you know, say if Messi's going to go be playing for Argentina and he's with Miami, obviously, what, like, are you gonna, you know, like, are you gonna want Miami games to play through the international break? No, you'd be absolutely criminal. But, you know, yeah, okay, other teams don't have Messi's, but for the Whitecaps, having, you know, Ali Ahmed and Julian Gressel in these sorts of games would help. And it's just, for me, it goes even beyond the performance aspects. The performance aspect's almost a given, right? Like, you want all your players available, injuries, you know, or other reasons permitting, every game possible. But I'd even, like, throw that out. Like, MLS, it's a chance to build up your depth. Injuries happen, you're fine, you know, your stars aren't going to play every game, your best players aren't going to play every game, that's soccer. But the fact that you willingly, you know, deny them of that opportunity for no good reason, that's again the frustrating part. But because, yeah, it's just it devalues your product, right? Like, imagine you're watching the Premier League and, you know, there's a lot of international, the English Premier League, and you're missing out, like, a chance to watch all these top players because they're with their countries. No, that would not fly. And I just find it hilarious that MLS continues to devalue its own product in this way. And, you know, it's hard to see what the benefit of this is, right? Like, what's the point of having two half cobbled together teams playing on a Saturday where the countries are playing anyways? People are like, that's my last point. Like, Whitecaps are playing Kansas, Canada's playing Guatemala at the same time. Yeah, okay, Canada, Guatemala, not the sexiest game in the world, but it's your country is playing. I get something where, I'm sorry, the bigger draw is putting on Canada and having that game on. The Kansas game, yeah, if you're a diehard, you'll throw it on the back, you know, background, like all of us sickos we do. But for the most part, for casual attention, especially say this was at home, like say this game was in Canada, I would have been a tough decision to make. Do I, you know, watch Canada versus Guatemala, or do I go to the stadium to watch the game? And I'm sure a lot of people would have struggled with that. And, you know, the fact that that sort of decision is having to be made, again, it's just, there's no good reason for it.
Well, if we want to go down a slight rabbit hole and get on an unrelated rant, I got a bone to pick. I mean, not just because I'm in the UK and it doesn't serve my purposes at all, but also, like, even if I was in Vancouver, the inflexibility of the MLS schedule for kickoff times now under Apple TV is a massive pain. It's a pain for sickos like you, Alex, that want to watch, you know, 10 different matches over the course of a whole day. But it's also, I've seen people like in the Vancouver Whitecaps Reddit or on Twitter talking about it. And it's a really good point. All these 7:30 starts, you know, if you've got young kids, you live out in Langley or Ladner or Tawasin or whatever, it makes it like a huge logistical pain or just like straight up inaccessible to go to a lot of these games. You know, there was real value to the 2 o'clock, to the 4 o'clock afternoon kickoffs on weekends. And, you know, I was going to say, like, the thing that's just unacceptable about the Canada Whitecaps overlap this past weekend is that it's not just the same day, but it's the same time. And that's because there's no flexibility in the MLS schedule. They can't just bump it to an earlier window like they would have used to been able to do it. So I don't know. I think that's something they have to, I understand they're trying to develop this sort of NFL-like predictability and consistency. But, you know, even within the NFL, you do have Sunday, you know, kind of midday, later afternoon, and you've got night matches when they're, you know, night games when you're playing Thursday, Sunday night football. You still get some variety in there. So I think that's something the league has to look at too. Again, if you're not just trying to cater to, you know, sort of the sexy MLS fan, the hipster MLS fan who's, you know, 30 something and wants to go out to the pub before and after, but you want to cater to everyone, including families, people commuting in, stuff like that. I think it's something they have to take a look at because, you know, I mean, we like a night match, Alex, but there's also some fun and some nostalgia in a nice afternoon kickoff. So I hope they consider that in the future.
Oh, trust me, I'm completely with you. And I'm especially noticing it now, like over the last, like with like CPL and League One, for example, like it's so refreshing that, you know, we'll just use some recent games I went to, like Sunday. It's Vancouver FC versus York United at 2 p.m. on a Sunday. You know how nice it was to head out, go to Langley, take in a game. Obviously, I'm working the game, so I do a bit of work. I commute home, and it's Sunday night, and I'm still able to go, oh, okay, like it's early. I can enjoy myself, enjoy my Sunday night, you know, take care of myself. Okay, good. Or even League One games where there's, you know, it's a Saturday kick. Some of these games I've been to, Rovers, they first kicks at, you know, the women's game kicks off at 1:00. All of a sudden you're done by 6:00. Oh, shoot. I can just go home and, you know, go make a night out or, you know, go hang out. Or like you just have that sort of flexibility. Or heck, I can go watch other soccer. Okay. I watch my Rovers in the afternoon. I can go watch MLS at night. And I think for what MLS also has to realize is, you know, I love your point about the copying the NFL. Cause I mean, obviously that's not a secret. We've said that before, but now that I think about it, it's like, why would you copy the NFL when it comes to eyeball grabbing? Yes, the NFL is a very popular sport and, you know, it works, but the NFL is a sport where it's kind of one-on-one. Like NFL is not competing against, you know, some leagues across Europe or creeps across America.
The NFL could broadcast a game on Monday at, you know, 9 a.m. Eastern time and millions of people would be tuned in. Like the NFL is too big to fail. So it's like, you know, they can kind of, the rules.
Well, it's a monopoly as well.
They can do whatever the heck they want and it's going to work. Whereas MLS not operating on the exact same parameters. You're one of, you know, 15, 20 different soccer leagues that people can choose or choose not to watch.
And that's not without talking about North America too, right? Cause it's like, just there's so much going on. And that's a thing I really notice is MLS, the new schedule is fine early in the year, especially when it was just that period where CPL hadn't started, League One hadn't started. Yeah, the European leagues were finishing, but those were all be in the morning. Okay, it was decent to be able to just dive into, you know, MLS 360 or, you know, split screen a couple of games and watch the ones you want to. But I've really noticed, especially since like the other leagues kicked off, it's been really hard to follow MLS beyond just like 2-3 games a week, just because, again, like especially these CPL and League One games, and you know, I'm sure there's a lot of people in the U.S. that face with the USL Championship with them having local teams and etc. Like they're all in the afternoon, you're able to go, and all of a sudden, like these MLS games, just they eat at you, and it adds up quick, and you know, you're not able to. What's nice about a CPL, for example, or League One, you're able to kind of spread your watching over a weekend, right? Like you're able to, okay, there's a game on a Friday, nice. There's none of those in MLS this year. Okay, there's a game on, you know, Saturday afternoon. You can wake up, watch that with your morning coffee and your toast. Oh, nice. The afternoon's on. There's another CPL game. And that's before the MLS slate's even kicked off. And then you go Sunday, oh, another game, right? And like there's that nice spread. It's a nice viewing experience. You can pick and choose, right? You're not sitting there thinking like, if I'm not in front of my TV at, you know, specifically Saturday 7:30, I'm missing out on everything. Whereas, yeah, MLS, you're not there. You sit back. You're almost like, you almost miss weeks, right? Like it's like this week as well. Like there's this July 4th game and, you know, there's other stuff going on with Canada and whatnot. And there's only Toronto FC playing. So I didn't really follow what was going on in MLS this week. And all of a sudden you blink and you're reading all this stuff. Like, oh yeah, there's that El Trafico game that kind of came out of nowhere. There's all this. And it was just like, it almost gets buried because you're so like, you blink for a second and you miss all this stuff. And you're like, I don't know. It's just, it is too much. It is 100% too much. And I'm happy we're mentioning it because, yeah, that's something I'd send right to MLS if you're talking feedback. It's just like something needs to give because they're hurting themselves. Again, there's competition. This isn't one where you can corner the market. You got red zone. People are, you're going to air red zone at Wednesday morning, on a work week. And again, like you mentioned, people are going to show up. Like there is other alternatives there. So it's like, why hurt yourself if you don't need to?
I think your last point is a fantastic one. And again, like this is, I don't know if I have the best perspective on this because right now it's all happening in the middle of the night, my time. So I'm not really the target audience anyways, but it does feel like in general, rather than creating like more connection and understanding of what's going on with other teams around the league, it feels like, well, if it's all happening at the same time, I only have time to watch my team. And so people just sort of tune out of everything else, which I think is the opposite of what they're, I think they were hoping to create like more of a league-wide cultural experience, but I just don't know if it's quite gone that way. And yeah, I mean, you've got people like, especially in the US, but even Canada, you know, if you live in Saskatchewan or you live in North Dakota, you might dabble and you might be interested in multiple teams, right? Like you might have fun. Even for me, like, you know, obviously growing up in Vancouver, like I'm a, Vancouver Canucks watcher, but I've been since a young kid, someone who's watched the Carolina Hurricanes just because they're sort of my adopted second team. And, you know, you get to do that and it's fun because, okay, you know that like the Eastern team is going to be playing earlier in the evening and then you've got the West team later in the evening. But right now it feels like it's really hard to sort of dabble and pick and choose, you know, some premier matchups or, oh, maybe I haven't seen Charlotte play in a while. So I'll drop in and see what they're up to. But it just seems to be cutting down on some of those opportunities. And yeah, I think we want more of that, not less than that. So, MLS clearly not listening to this podcast, but nonetheless, we will list our gripes here.
Yeah, absolutely. There's lots to learn, right? Lots to learn, growing pains, and hopefully, I think it's just feedback to take to heart. Because yeah, it's something where it's like you want as many viewers to be engaged, and yeah, I'm honestly saying it too out of pure like nostalgia. Like I miss waking up and there's the 10 a.m. game on because they'd have it 1 o'clock Eastern. So it's 10 a.m. Pacific and it's some Eastern clash between like New York and Orlando. And it's, you can tell it's sunny and the crowd's having a good time.
And so like, okay, that would be the kind of match I would tune into. Like I would have no intent going into that weekend to watch those two teams. But then when I see it's on by itself in the morning, I'd be like, all right, sure, I'm in. Let's see how this goes.
And then next thing you know, like, you know, maybe all of a sudden you don't have any plans on, you leave the telly on, all of a sudden there's, you know, and next thing you know, Charlotte versus, take your pick, New England rolls on, and next thing you know, you're watching that, and you just kind of get in a roll, right? Like, you kind of lose that. So that's all I'm saying is bring back those days where I could, that's just so oddly specific, but bring back my cereal and MLS days. Bring back all the beauty that comes with that. But one thing's for sure, and one thing you can't control, the Vancouver Whitecaps will be playing on the usual MLS schedule slate, Saturday, 7:30. You can do that with your eyes closed these days. All we have to do is tell you who they're playing and you can and where it is, and you can kind of figure it out yourself almost these days with the how rigid the schedule is. Vancouver, home, at 7:30, that's Saturday night, that's BC Place. And we'll break it down after a quick break. All right. Of course, as mentioned before, a very short interlude. Big game for the Whitecaps this weekend. It's rivalry weekend. Again, adding to the strangeness of the MLS schedule, it feels weird to say, like, because the Whitecaps played SKC, like, what, a month and a half ago? 2 months ago? Or not SKC, Seattle at home a month and a half ago. So very strange to see them play Seattle at home in such quick succession. But it's a rivalry game. It's Cascadia, so those games always mean more for many a reason. And it's, like, a good Seattle team, one that's been in you know, playing well, but maybe not getting the results. So, I mean, Sam, how are you feeling ahead of a rivalry weekend, I guess, so to start? Because these games always do mean more, whether we like to admit or not.
Yeah, not against San Jose this time. What's up with that? But no, as you mentioned, kind of weird to have the Whitecaps and the Seattle Sounders play not even a reverse fixture, but like a repeat fixture within such a short span of time. As you mentioned, I mean, Seattle overall, they're still the best team in terms of expected goal difference in MLS. You know, you look at their defensive record. I think that's the thing that like really stands out to me. Stephen Fry with 11 clean sheets already this season. They've only conceded two or more goals in MLS play five times this year. One of those five coming against Vancouver when they lost 2-0. But like overall, this is a team is just really well constructed, really, really solid from top to bottom. The only thing, honestly, that's like a bit concerning is their recent form. And as you mentioned, Alex, it's not necessarily like they're playing poorly. It's just that results haven't gone their way. I mean, they do only have 3 wins in their last 10. They only have 1 win in their last 6, I believe. So that, you know, that's spotty for a team that's used to being right at the top of the Western Conference standings. Like Vancouver, I mean, they've been missing some players, but overall, I think it's been a good year. I mean, if we just want to highlight some specific guys, I'll at least tell you, Alex, who I was kind of having a look at. I mean, the youngster from Brazil, kind of winger attacking midfield type, Leo Chu, has really had a breakout season. He's up to 7 primary assists already this year. So that's only 1 off the league lead in that category and has been playing really well. And obviously they've got a real wealth of kind of attacking mid types where they've got, you know, Nicola Dero, Albert Rusnak, Chu, and then they've had Haber and Raul Ruiz Diaz, Jordan Morris up front. So lots of striking options there as well. Haber kind of had the Brian White moniker early in the season of getting on the ends of lots of chances, but not necessarily finishing. Ruiz Diaz kind of been in and out of fitness a little bit. I think it's been an up and down year for him. And then Morris obviously got off to a really hot start and has been away a bit recently. So those guys, you know, there's lots of chance creation. There's lots of good attacking play there. And then, you know, Yao Paulo is always kind of holding things down in the defensive midfield. One thing that kind of popped off to me, I mean, this is something where I probably don't pay as much attention to Seattle as I did before, as we were talking about with the way MLS is kind of set up at the moment, but they've had a 17-year-old starting in the midfield alongside Yao Paulo in the last 2 matches. And this was a guy that was kind of popping off at the U20 World Cup as well. And people seem to be really excited about. I'm just going to pull up the name here to make sure I get it right.
Obed Vargas. He's one to watch. I have enjoyed watching him when I've had an opportunity.
Exactly. So you know, the way that Seattle's been able to sort of infuse a guy like Vargas into a team full of like wily veteran, very proven players. And the same thing could be said as well of, I'm just trying to look up again. This is the fullback. Pardon me one second.
Is it Cody Baker?
Cody Baker, again, he only just turned 19, and the rest of the back line's been really, you know, is a little more veteran and consistent, but Baker's been playing really, really well. They've got Nuhu, they've got Yirmar, and then also, I'm blanking on guys off the top of my head. Jackson Reagan. Jackson Reagan's been having a really, really solid season. You know, for a 24-year-old American, he's been super consistent alongside Yamar. And Stephen Fry started every match in MLS play for Seattle. So, like, they have that center back pairing and then the goalkeeper. I think Jackson Reagan started only 19 matches. And, like, that's the guy who started the least of those 3. So basically those 3 at the back have been the same the entire season. They found a good youngster to play fullback on the other side of Nuhu. And then, you know, they've just got real quality players throughout the lineup, and they've been able to just sprinkle in some youngsters with a bit of upside. So you have to like the roster construction overall. I think that's really what I come away from. They're not a team really that they're a team that creates lots of good chances. Maybe the ultimate, like the finishing hasn't been there at times. Like there've been matches where they've created a lot and probably not scored as much as they should have, but the defensive record's been really good. And yeah, it seems like a team that even if the results aren't going perfectly for them, like they're going to succeed over the long term because they're doing things the right way.
Yeah, well, it's a fascinating team because they've been so good defensively. Like they're allowing less than one XG per game defensively, which again, that's anytime you get that, that's just absurd. Like, you know, that's just, again, that is ridiculous to look at statistically. And then, of course, you look at the offense. If anything, the offense has been the bigger surprise, and that's kind of the story I've been getting from following out of Seattle, that really Raul Ruidíaz just hasn't really looked like himself. Hebert's looked great, but can't, you know, hit a barn door, it seems like. I think he's, if I'm not mistaken, he's missed the most big chances in MLS. Him and Brian White were fighting it for a while, and then White started scoring, and Hebert just can't. Leo Chu looks great, but again, he's a chance creator. He's not been a chance finisher. Jordan Morris had a hot streak, but even he cooled down in terms of his finishing. And Ladero as well has kind of lost his final product a bit. Like he's still running a lot, being a good, you know, eight almost, but he's kind of lost at least this year, like not saying he has, but it feels like to a lot of those, they've been worried that he's kind of lost those final end product that made him so dangerous over the last 5 years. So it's really just been the attack that's been the struggle. Cause yeah, defensively Fry has been, you know, he's having low key. I wouldn't be surprised if he gets thrown into the goalkeeper of the year race. That pair of Yamar Gomez and, Jackson Reagan's been excellent. It kind of Reagan had a really good, like one game at the Club World Cup, if I'm not mistaken, that kind of he's built off of ever since. And then because of that, like Javier Arriaga kind of fell out of the squad, even though he's an international and, you know, was such a good player. And they've been kind of looking to trade him because of how good Reagan's been. And, you know,
he's had injury concerns too, I think, right? Or he's been out for a while.
It's been a bit of both, if I'm not mistaken, because I know even when healthy, Reagan's been the preferred option. And I saw some rumors that, you know, they're looking to move Arriaga out because, again, international center back not playing when you have domestics doing the job. Plus, like, again, the fact that Abdoulaye Sissoko has slotted in. I'm not sure if he must have a green card or must be some sort of domestic because he's been with the Tacoma Defiant since 2019 and he's been in the U.S. for a while. It's like they've got depth.
Yeah, I was looking at that and I was like, there's no way that's taking up an international spot.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's like they've got defensive depth too, right? The fact that the Alex Roldan's missing at right back and Baker is able to step up, you know, Nuhu's just been kind of doing a job. Like they're really set defensively. I'm just fascinated to see how everything comes together offensively as well. Like even the defensive, like the double pivot, Joao Paulo's return has been ginormous. You can tell how much they missed him last year after his injury. You know, the fact that Vargas can slot in or even Rusnak a bit deeper, depending on who's available. I'm just going to be fascinated to see what they do to get the goals to drop, because it is a ginormous concern. I'm looking here at the XG numbers. They have 1.41 XG per game, but they've scored 1.14 goals for. That's like, that is barely over a goal per game or a goal per 90 minutes. It is, you know, barely better than, you know, some of the bottom feeding teams, right? Like I'm looking here, it's like got them in the categories of the, you know, Miami, Dallas, Portland, Chicago Fire. Like, you know, it's not the sort of company you want to be in when it comes to scoring goals. And also, as just a bit of an aside, a parenthesis, like it's funny looking this up, this XG4 per game, and guess who's top spot now after this past week? And the Vancouver Whitecaps with 1.59. So I'm just saying, it is very abnormal to see that, must be said, but it's as equally as normal to see the offensive struggles Seattle's had, because that's kind of always been their bread and butter. Like, yeah, they've been solid defensively, and have Fries won them games before. He won them that, you know, that 2019 or no, was it the 2016 final with the save and all that. But like, you know, this has always been a team that at their best, they're getting goals, they're getting Rui Diaz scoring, they're, you know, Ladero's balling out, and just their struggles there have been a surprise.
Yeah, they've always seemed like a team that just kind of does enough defensively to be like middle of the park, middle of the class, and then they're just, their offense would take over. I mean, to your XG point, I think something that's really stark too is they've had some big matches that have like inflated that average XG too, right? Like they created 4.0 XG on opening day against the Colorado Rapids. They created 2.8 against RSL the following match. You know, they created 2.9 against San Jose in a 1-0 loss. So they've had some big outputs, and then there's just been a lot of, you know, kind of a little bit more timid showings, or just opportunities they haven't really finished off. So I think just, yeah, finding that final product is times, and just the striking consistency a bit, right? As you mentioned, like Rui Diaz not having the best season, Morris been a bit streaky, Hibbert just not finishing. It seems like it would almost behoove them to just kind of commit to one guy or commit to one partnership and roll with it rather than sort of rotating through a list of options. But I guess in a sense, that's a good problem to have because they're all reasonably attractive options. So I do have confidence that Brian Schmetzer and co will figure that out eventually. Alex, flipping to the Whitecaps a little bit. I mean, we can talk about their lineup choices for this weekend, and things have changed a bit since last week. Hearing today, which is Thursday, from training, sounds like Tristan Blackman, Brian White, and Russell Tybert are all full participants in training. So I would assume that means they have the green light to go this weekend against Seattle. However, Andres Kubas, who picked up a knock, I think it was a thigh, if I'm correct, but nonetheless, lower body, a leg type issue that he picked up in Sporting Kansas City, is not going to be available for the Seattle match. So it does make things a little bit interesting in the midfield. Kubas is someone who you just pencil in at that number six and don't think about it. But now the Whitecaps are going to have to reconsider, reorchestrate their midfield. I was ready to put Seb Berhalter and Andres Kubas alongside each other to rehash what worked so well the last time these two teams played, but that's off the table. And then obviously with Tristan Blackman being back, there's maybe a little bit more flexibility defensively too, right? Because part of the reason they went with this back three was that they liked that more for how it suited Laborda and Martin's tendencies without Tristan Blackman there. So it does open things up a little bit for Vancouver. So yeah, Alex, any points you wanted to pick up on there? And then we can maybe talk hypothetical starting lineup and some predictions for this one.
I mean, all this showed is that if I'm Axel Schuster right now, and I, you know, the transfer window opened on Tuesday, I think it was, if I'm not mistaken, Wednesday, whenever July 5th was, buy a midfielder. as simple as that. Go get, you know, I'd ideally say a cheap Canadian domestic midfielder. Of course, I'd always say that. I mean, hey, you know, people were, you know, there was interest in the likes of a Sean Young earlier in the year from MLS sides. All that to say that it's clear that the organizational depth at midfield, you know, is not there, and it's quickly been shown, right? It's, again, when everyone's healthy, it's a very good midfield group. The fact that you're arguing Ahmed versus Schopf, right? Like a young breakout Canadian with the national team versus a established Bundesliga player, like that shows you the top end depth. But really, the fact that all of a sudden Ahmed's away, Gressel's away, Kubas gets hurt, your three main guys are gone. Of course, you know, anytime you're missing your three main guys, you're going to be in trouble. But the fact is, like, you know, the fact you're looking there, and it's not just a matter of who steps up in terms of fills it. It's more like genuinely who. Like, you might have to play shorthanded in midfield because you don't have the sheer numbers, right? Like, Gio Aguilar has been getting calls, but as we saw, that's completely decimated the second team's midfield because there's no midfield depth there. I just think for the biggest thing that stands out to me is that there's all of a sudden a need to just get some healthy midfielders in. And again, maybe it could be like a guy from the CPL that comes in now, fills in as an emergency, and then when everyone's healthy, seasons a bit at the second team and kind of tweens. Because, it's a bit of a clear organizational need, and it shows that, yeah, you're looking at this game and who's going to start, and you're like, well, Boerhalter's going to start because he's the one healthy midfielder, and Schopf as well, assuming that, you know, the travel didn't take him out. And it's like, okay, what are your other options? Like a Russell Tybert fresh off a bit of a lengthy injury. Like,
I genuinely had an internal dialogue today when I saw, shout out to Har, journalist's tweet about the injuries. When I saw Andres Kubas was unavailable and simultaneously that Russell Tybert was back at training, I kind of initially went, oh, well, that doesn't, you know, Tybert, that doesn't matter. And then I was like, well, wait, with Kubas out, could Russell Tybert start against Seattle? Like, that was...
And Ahmed, and Gressel.
It genuinely ran through my head, right? Like, is Rusty going to get a start? And that's kind of where it's at in the Whitecaps midfield with these absences. So, yeah, that's something they got to look at. But, you know, I would say correspondingly, like, in terms of depth, I mean, they have enough strikers. They just don't maybe have the depth strikers they want. And then center back too, I think, is something we saw how big, you know, it's crazy when Tristan Blackman's absence basically means that Vanni Sartini doesn't want to play a back four anymore. Like that seems concerning that one injury changes the way you feel about your team defensively that much too. So I don't know. You can look at all three positions and say that when they've got their full host of players, you like what they have. But the moment there's a couple absences, it starts to get pretty thin, which I guess is just kind of emblematic of MLS teams, broadly speaking, really.
Well, hear me out. Am I out to lunch for this idea? Simon Betcher, trade him for a midfielder in MLS. Is that out for... am I out for lunch for suggesting it? Because they do have a, like, again, up front, like, it's
white. And if someone needs a 75th minute come off the bench and poach some goals type, I can see there being, you know, albeit limited, being somewhat of a market there, and that you'd certainly get like a serviceable midfield player in return, I would think. I don't know. These inter MLS trades don't happen all that often, but sometimes when they do, like, they make a lot of sense. So I don't hate it.
Well, it's just like domestic, so he wouldn't count that. He's American, right? Striker, that's, you know, his position in need. Cheap strikers don't come, you know, like, I'm... obviously, I don't think they would, considering what, but, like, for example, TFC could use, all, you know, cheap strikers. I'm sure there's other teams around that could use cheap strikers. Funnily enough, with TFC, they're loaning in Miguel Ibarra today from Atlanta, who's a midfielder, and all of a sudden they're about to have a glut of midfielders. Who knows? Maybe a Betcher for a TFC midfielder trade might not be as completely wild as, you know, what might sound at first if you look into it. You know, and yeah, you'd like to keep a guy like Betcher, a guy who went from second team to first team. He's had, you know, he scored a lot of goals in his limited minutes, but also, could it be a chance to sell high a bit on him, right? The fact that he scored limited minutes, maybe a team can look and be like, shoot, we don't like our options up front. Maybe if we give him a bit more of a run, he can continue to put that pace, right? Like, maybe someone takes that bet that they can turn him into a starter for their team. I don't know. I'm just throwing that out because it's one of those where... we've, you know, for Betcher as well, we've talked the struggle of, I want to see more minutes from him. And it's like, well, you have White who's doing well, and you have Cordova, who you're obviously going to want to play into form given what he costs and what he gives, right? And it's like, Betcher, if in a 15 minute role at his price, that's phenomenal, right? That's great value. But also, could that value be maybe help you leverage a piece that you need in the puzzle? Just throwing that out there now, that, because again, we're looking at that midfield depth, and it's something where, like, yeah, you look at any and all avenues to improve that. And if that's maybe a trade to clear up some of the, you know, because especially now that Johnson's just signed too, like, your striker depth is, like, you're running four deep on first team strikers. And you really play a formation that only uses one most of the time. You're usually shoehorning one in as a 10, and Johnson's shown to fit that 10 role maybe a bit more than Betcher has, where he kind of likes to lead the line and be that number nine.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. Just that, I mean, you know, no, Johnson hasn't scored in an MLS play yet, but you kind of feel like Johnson can fill that Simon Boettcher role. Like if the Simon Boettcher role is going to be 75th minute, come on and provide energy, mix things up. Like you don't need two or three of those in the first team. You just need one. And so I think that is maybe an area where they can take a bit of extra depth and redistribute it, or at least look at it. It would be interesting. Okay, I'm going to dive into my projected lineup then for Seattle. And I'll be interested, Alex, if we have any disagreements here, because there's not a heck of a lot to choose from. But we'll start with Yoyi Takaoka in goal. I think that's reasonably straightforward. I tried to find a way to create a back four, but I just couldn't talk myself into it. So we're going 3-4-2-1. With Matias Laborto, Ranko Veselinovic, and Tristan Blackman across the back three, then a midfield wing-back combo. I mean, you can make this a three or a five at the back, depending on your inclination. But Luis Martins, Seb Berhalter, Alessandro Schopp, and Ryan Raposo from left to right across that formation. Then Pedro Vite and Ryan Gold in your dual number 10s. And then Brian White up front. So, nothing too crazy there. I mean, that's kind of back, I think, to the spirit of the way the team's playing, been playing a good amount of the season, and kind of makes use of, I think makes the best use of the players they have available. I'd be lying if I said I wasn't a little bit concerned about just a midfield four of Martins, Berhalter, Schopf, and Raposo. I don't know if that fills me with a heck of a lot of confidence, but maybe that's something where you're asking Ryan Gold to play a little bit more centrally and be a bit responsible defensively. I mean, it depends on the way Seattle sets up and how much of the ball Vancouver holds. But I think that's kind of just their best 11 players at the moment that they can field together. And so that's Vanni Sartini's job to figure out how to best make that work.
Yeah, look, I agree with you. I think if anything, just to maybe throw a bit of a contrarian one, and maybe something that they could also see is if they stick with the 4-3-2-1, what we could also see is Takaoka goal, a four of Laborda, Veselinovic, Blackman, and Martins, and then a midfield three of Schopf on one side, Vitor Gold as one of the eights, take your pick, and then Berhalter the six. You put the other 10 up, you put White lead the line, and you either slot in a Cordova alongside and kind of keep that up and, keep Cordova trying to build his confidence, because he's actually, he's been having a good run of performances. Or, maybe you throw in a Levante Johnson there's other options as well. You could throw in Ryan Raposo at one of the fullback positions, go keep that up. So I think that is some options. But again, against Seattle's very dominant midfield, I'd say you'd want to keep things relatively tight defensively. So might be worth just going a double pivot and be like, okay, look, Schopf, just try to play more of a progressor role where you're sitting deep. You're not running up too much. And it can almost be like a 3-4-2-1 where this, the wing backs and the front three kind of providing that, or, even you modify your midfield a bit where it ends up being more of like a double pivot, like a 4-2-3-1 where you kind of ask Schopf and Berhalter to hold it down, and then you kind of allow that a front four to be a little more free to get a bit more going in the counter.
Yeah, I mean, my thoughts would be that like against LAFC, I really liked what I saw from Schopf when he was a little bit of that like deeper lying playmaker, and he wasn't tasked with as much box to box running. So, if they're going to do this 3-4-2-1 thing, I could envisage Berhalter and Schopf both being relatively conservative and staying relatively deep. And, then if you have three, like really reasonably, three kind of center backs as your three center backs in, you're not putting Luis Martins back there, then Martins and Raposo can get forward on the ball, provide some width, overlap with Vite and Gold a little bit more. And then ultimately you also have that outlet in Brian White that can help buy some time for those guys to make some runs, get forward in space. So it'll be interesting to see how it pans out. I mean, yeah, there's always an outside shot for, Sergio Cordova could get a start if you go some combination of two strikers up front. Lavonte Johnson, you never know, right? You know, Russell Tybert outside shot at a midfield start, but I know the pitchforks will be out if that's the case. So for Rusty's sake, maybe we hope that doesn't happen. But yeah, it should be interesting. And then, I mean, Alex, in terms of the way this match is going to go, I was filled with a lot of confidence after LAFC away. And despite being reasonably confident on the podcast today in the long-term project, it still sucks to have these key players away for Vancouver. So I struggle and I hesitate to pick a Whitecaps win, but I feel like they'll get points. So I think I'm going to go very, very cowardly, very timid again and predict a 1-1 draw. I just, something about, I just can't quite, man, if they had Ali Ahmed or Julian Gressel back, I think that might be enough for me to push it over the line. I'm not quite there given the players they have at their disposal at the moment.
Yeah, I'm going to go 2-1 win. I just think, I don't know, it's one of those where it's home. And funnily enough, like, I don't know, maybe this is just like I'm thinking of good examples in my head, but the Whitecaps always struggle during international breaks away, but they always do really well international breaks at home, right? Like, they almost, like, when they're playing weakened teams at home, they thrive. Like, I'm thinking that victory against Austin in 2021, such a random game to come to my head. I'm trying to think if there's any other examples of that, or if I'm just thinking of that one Austin game and running with it as some invented trend that I've thought of in my head. But for whatever reason, I don't know, I just always think of these memories of two weakened teams going out at BC Place. That usually seems to benefit the Whitecaps. So I'll go 2-1 win, and that would be good. Just continue to, you know, get some valuable Cascadia points, get a huge 3 points, and get back on track ahead of this huge week, right? Or it's one where I think at the bare minimum, like, 9 out of 9 feels like exaggerated, but I feel like if you want to, you know, make up for your road malaises, you need a 9 out of 9 week, or at the very least a 7 out of 9 week. And getting this win over Seattle would be a good start, because kind of after that, as we mentioned, the Whitecaps will welcome back a Gressel or an Ahmed. Other teams will be doing the same, right? Like, you know, if I'm not mistaken, I don't even think El Salvador, you know, they didn't make it out of their group, did they? So, like, Roldan, obviously, if this game would have been on a, or they probably did, actually, and I'm making things up here, but let's see, Gold Cup 2023. They did not make it out of their group. So a guy like Alex Roldan, maybe if this game was a day or two later, he could have been amongst those available. Maybe he will be. Watch out for that. Maybe he sneaks in as a starter. But yeah, basically as the next week goes along, they're going to get their full strength team slowly back. So if you can get an early 3 points now, that would set you up very nicely to even have a chance at a 9-point week when you're up against a Austin team that hasn't done great in midweek. You'd back yourself there. And then against a Galaxy team, yeah, that just won El Tráfico and will be in great form. But Sally Galaxy, they've struggled this year and you're at home. Like, you know, go after a 9-point week, and feels like Seattle's the hardest of the three. So get that win off the top.
Yeah, I really hope that you're correct. And I certainly do think the Whitecaps have the capability of doing it. It's just something's providing a little bit of trepidation. I think, it sounds crazy to say, but like, that's not crazy. I think it makes a lot of sense, really. Like, the Whitecaps need 7 points out of this week, undoubtedly. That is like
the very minimum.
That is the minimum bar. That's drawing one match and winning the other two. That's you know, anything else is a maximum point performance.
Margin for error is
so the difference tiny. Between bare minimum and maximum is quite small in that case. But it does kind of feel like that's the worst they can do and still be really confident in their playoff chances. It's crazy how congested this Western Conference is. Like, after that LA win with matches in hand, you're kind of going, oh, the Whitecaps are in full control here. They could do whatever they want. I mean, I even went and I saw that they're down 9th in the West, and I was kind of like, oh, but if I do like points per match, they'll be way up. And it's like, nope, now they're down to 8th in terms of points per match. Like, things move quickly with just how tight the West is at the moment. So yeah, they need to make good on these home matches while they can, and then deal with whatever the heck League's Cup is going to be, and then dig into a road heavy back end of the season.
7-game road trip, by the way, in the second half must be thrown out. 7-game road trip thanks to this Colorado postponement. So yeah. that's going to be one where other, you know, they need to go into that is set up best as possible. And
that's nine crazy. Out of nine would... And then just, I wanted to echo your one thing about like good performances with a bunch of absences at home and not so good on the road. I mean, one I think of is like that very disappointing 1-1 draw in Minnesota earlier this season when Minnesota was missing like seven or eight regular starters and the Whitecaps dominated, but just like couldn't find a way to get it across the finish line. You're totally correct that if like they're playing at home in that match, they probably win like 4-0 or 4-1.
5-0.
Yeah, it seems like in those 50-50 sort of tense, maybe like a bit like sloppy affairs, Vancouver always finds a way to like not get 3 points on the road, and yet at home it often leads to like blowout victories. So you know, Seattle's not missing like a ton here. It's not a devastating blow to their squad, but I hope that trend continues. You know, another 2-0 3-1 win would be absolutely massive. As you said, like especially mentality wise, if they're able to beat the best team they're facing this week, get key players back, and then roll into their next two home matches before League's Cup, that would be fantastic. So certainly the optimum result. And one hopefully we'll see on Saturday night at BC Place.
Yeah, for sure. And well, what remains to be seen. Big times ahead for the Whitecaps, though, that's for sure. And that's pretty much it for episode 171 here. Not much CPL chatter. It was a fun long weekend in the CPL. So, you know, hopefully you had a chance to get out. There was two local games, of course. Pacific hosted Ottawa in a chaotic, entertaining 2-2 game, one that Pacific probably should have won. But in the end, they split the spoils. And then York came to town for Vancouver, of course, on Sunday. As mentioned earlier, York picked up a 2-1 victory. And there's more this weekend, so don't you know, snooze on that. Friday, so this might be, you know, day of your listening or after, Vancouver hosts Halifax. So you know, a bit of Friday night footy, like we mentioned, isn't exactly something we've seen a lot of in MLS. So if you miss some Friday night footy, Vancouver, Halifax should be a good game. And then on Saturday, Pacific Cavalry in a very low-key, quiet league, big tilt. You know, Pacific, can they extend that lead, top the table further after a draw? And if Cavalry wins, all of a sudden the gap between them and Pacific would be just 4 points. And of course, Pacific wouldn't have the advantage of all the games in hand that they do have on teams number 2 and 3, which are York and Forge. And as for League One, lots of big games as well coming up. Just most teams have about 3 games left. So it's really the business end of booking that Canadian championship spot, booking, you know, that League One intra-provincial Canada competition spot. You know, it's the women's, it's coming down to the wire between the top few. And then on the men's, still, it's still completely wide open for the playoff race. Victoria and Rovers seem to be the favorites, though, in that one. Watch out for that, because they play each other in Victoria on the last game, and it could come down to that, which would be absolutely fantastic. Imagine that, a spot in the Canadian Championship on the line in a game like that. But before then, lots of big games, you know, this weekend as well. I think, you know, Rovers visit Nottsamwa, which would be a good little game around Vancouver. That's one I'm looking potentially visiting. I think there's also a good one between Harbourside and Whitecaps. So lots to dive into there. But on that note, you can find me on Twitter at Alex Gungi Ruzic. And because we're giving this a go, why not? And we'll look to, you know, follow along with any more updates. I'm giving Threads a go. You can find me on Threads at AGR on the case. Of course, Mark Zuckerberg, Elon Musk, the rivalry is very stiff, and Zuckerberg threw in a bit of a punch of his own by creating Threads. And you know, everyone has an Instagram. I have it myself, which has made the transition a little easier than it might have been on other apps. So I decided to give it a go. I will be posting on both throughout the weekend with all the footy. You know, on Twitter, definitely going to be a lot of, you know, sharing stuff and a lot of news and whatnot. And Threads, similar, but also going to keep it a bit of a chiller vibe, because that's kind of the vibe it's given us. So you can find me on there at AGR on the case.
I love to hear that. Yeah, I haven't dived into the thread space just yet, but stay tuned for that. And yeah, stay tuned for maybe a bit of a third sub presence too. We'll figure out what the best way to do that is. You can find me, as always, at Samuel_Roboat on Twitter, at thethirdsub.ca. You can find our podcast at the 3RD sub on Twitter. And yeah, whenever we pop up on Threads, we'll be sure to let you know. So thanks everyone for listening. Enjoy the upcoming weekend, and we'll chat again soon.